Just to say hello to everybody. I'm a religious sister, Bernadette, but I prefer to be known as Mary, Joseph's sister. And I just want to say that Bridget is here, Elizabeth, the three girls, and Emmanuel, our brother, and also John, Elizabeth's husband. And on behalf of all of us, we want to say how deeply honoured we are, because all of our family, music and poetry is in our very souls. Our parents had it, and we're all literary, really. And I thought that beautiful expression at the end of Emmanuel's reading, that no gate can be opened. The gate of love can be only opened from the inside.
Yeah.
So, but there's a funny thing I'll just tell you about Joseph. When Bridget was looking after him, and all of us were there with Joseph, Joseph said to me at one of the nights I was up with him, he said, before I entered, I was the eldest of 10, so I decided to bring them all to the Sound of Music. And when I entered, I told them, to be honest with you, I have no time for institutions or the traditional church. I go to like Joseph, the God of the universe. And I told whoever was there, I said, well, sorry, I won't be entering them because I promised the family I'd bring them to the Sound of Music. So I did bring them. But Joseph said to me during the night that night, he said, Mary, do you know, he says, for a long time afterwards, I thought you were Maria in the Sound of Music, and they were all your nuns. He thought he was getting a preview. Anyway, they're certainly loving this room tonight, and I feel honoured to be part of the family I am part of. And I just humbly say thank you to everybody. It's inspiring to see such love of poetry, but far deeper than love of poetry is love of humanity. I run a music and arts centre, but I tell them, sorry, I say it's people first and the music second. Yeah, God bless everybody. Thanks for many. I'm Bridget, and I'm quite overwhelmed at the love and privilege to be here. But I just want to say that there are no words that describe really Joseph in his latter moments and during the night. Joseph could listen to music and be in ecstasy listening to the words on the notes. He listened to the bird song, and then all of a sudden he danced in the bed, and we danced at the end of the bed. He said he travelled, but not enough. As you know, he said most of his travel was in his imagination. And he said when he'd eat pineapple, he'd feel that he was in the Bahamas. So the kind of person Joseph was, being the youngest, was a lovely, gentle person, full of soul, full of honesty. And as you know, he said it as it was. And during the latter stages, when he couldn't eat much, he might say, will you go into the kitchen? I want a half slice of brown toast. I want the butter melted in the oven. I want a teaspoon of coffee with a half spoon of sugar. So he was very precise, but he being precise, you got his honesty. In the end, you'll be glad to know that Joseph came to terms with leaving this world. He lived a very happy life. And in the end, he said he was okay to go. He knew we'd be sad, but he said, into your hands, I commit your spirit. That the chaplain said that to me in the hospice. So just to know, he was deeply spiritual. And as we were clearing the house, we found numerous little holy pictures and Bible quotes, but they were all purposeful and meaningful and poetic. So I just want to say to all Joseph's friends, all of you, that we knew Joseph was, he loved Cork, he loved Blarney, and we can see now this was really his other home. And so we're very deeply grateful you invited us. It's wonderful that you celebrate his life, because sometimes people can be forgotten. But it's been difficult for us all. So I'm very grateful for tonight, because in all the clearing and cleaning and doing the work, tonight gave me a chance to partly grieve, because I haven't done it yet. So thank you.
And he went into the Mercy Hospital. He was in for 5 days, and I think he walked out at that stage, because none of us could visit him with the COVID. And he said, "Do you know someone?" He said, "The greatest mercy there was that I got out alive," he said. The other thing he said was he got a clot in one of his legs, so he had to have a crutch. But he said, "Mary, to believe this, I went in on 2 feet and I came out on a crutch." So, good night, everybody. And
thank you so much. Debbie and Margaret. Thank you for your lovely words there. And to start off, the open mic will invite Joe's brother Emmanuel to sing a song.
I don't have I'll have to put this near to the mic to see if you can pick up the sound. As you know, Joe always liked to sing a play. Sometimes you would sing this song about him singing. So I'm down, and so I'm out, but so are many others. So I feel I'm trying to hide my head needs his covers. Life is like the seasons. After winter comes the spring. So I'll keep the smile of heart and see what tomorrow brings. I've been told, and I believe, that life is meant for living. And even when my chips are low, there's still some left for giving. I've been many places. I skip a bit. So I think I'll stay a while and see if some dreams come true. There isn't much that I have learned through all my foolish years, except that life keeps running in cycles. First there's laughter, then those tears. But I'll keep my head up high, although I'm kind of tired. My gal just up and left last week, and Friday I got fired. You know, it's almost funny, but things can't get worse for long. So I'll keep on trying to sing. But please just don't ask me now. Thank you.
Next up to the Michael Stanley Nash, please. In his cool blue, his cool purple coat.
Okay. It's been a great night. I was saying to Joe's family, I got to know Joe better tonight than I did the 8 or 9 years that I've actually known. Yeah, but it's been a great night. It's great that we can do these things with people. I'm going to read something. When I met Joe here first, we used to chat outside and he used to break out his states. And most of what's gone up there, I was close. Most of what's gone up there, I was close. This isn't quite poetry. I don't think it is anyway. And for those of you who are not from the top, you might need a translation. Kieran will do the translation for you later on. Because this is written in Carconian, back in Carconian. Based on a true story, it's actually a true story. Come here to me, friends. Come here to me, Bjorns. I was up the north side last night listening to this fiend about a job. He lives in Churchfield, by not a stone thrown out from Knocker, the heart of the north side, a place where no matter what, the spade is a spade, and they tell you how it is straight to your fears. So you can imagine my shock when his old doll opens the door and says, take your shoes off before you come in, Fink. I will, yes, says I, convinced she's ball hopping. But then she goes, here, man, take them off. And I'm pointing at me shoes and I'm going, chillax, be ordered on your pair of rubber dollies, and we are on it. But then she lamps me straight in the eye and says, I'm deadly serious, boy. Take them off. Oh, you don't come in. It was then my mate appeared behind her. I was lamping him and he was stancing me, and I could tell he was totally motto, just wanted the world to end motto like. But then he shrugged his shoulders as if to say, what can I do, boy? The bjar is mental. So, and this is my point. I had to take off my rubber dollies to walk into a gaff in Churchfield. In Churchfield, like. I mean, Jesus, Mary, and Holy John Mac from the Dixies, what is going on, boy? I had to take off my rubber dollies to get into a gaff in church. Back in the day, I didn't even have shoes up there, boy. Or doors, for that matter. Not to mention carpets. And now there's this bjore asking me, no, stall the ball, stall the while, insisting that I take off my rubber dollies before I can cross the threshold. As if our gaff is some kind of temple, that's the word I'm looking for. She thinks her gaff is a temple, boy, and she's living in Churchfield on the north side of the Cork. I'm in the name of Jesus, Mary, and Holy John Mac from the Dixies. What is happening to our city, boy? I mean, if my one said that to me, I'd be taken off full stop, like, and there'd be no coming back either, boy, no coming back. And there's me, buddy. A pure dears and the berries of a Northside champion shamed by a space for the bjore into taking his shoes off so he can get into his own gaff. As if he's some sort of scoby. No, that has to be some kind of, I don't know, like, watch it. Do you know what it is, boy? Tis domestic abuse, that's what it is, boy. Pure, unmitigated domestic abuse. So there's only one thing for it, boy. I'm going to have to get on to the council and the social services and Red FM and 96 FM and the Examiner and the Shades too, boy. Because your one, Nicole is her name, by the way. She's not getting away with that kind of domestic abuse, boy. Not on my watch. Not on my watch, boy. Later, fiends. Later, bjors. Later.
There'll be no translation. We'll only ruin it. Phyllis Brand, if you'd like to come up and stay home, you'd be more than welcome.
say very quickly, it's an honour to be here with ECO and be with Joseph's family and meeting a side to him that I'm happy to meet. It's an honour. One of my vivid memories of Joseph was that myself and Benjamin Burns, there he is, were listening very closely to Joseph's stories, and we realized a regular character that was coming up, a mother-in-law. And it's Benjamin Burns, Ben, had the courage to go up to him asking Maureen's, Arthur Maines, like, who's this mother-in-law? Do you actually have a mother-in-law? No, but she's a great character, like, you know, it's the mother-in-law. That's just the mischievous, beautiful nature of Joseph. He was always very supportive, and I was writing away in empty classroom as I do, and I was kind of thinking, like, I was writing about a Shanachie. Shanachie is like an Irish traditional storyteller. Joseph was, some ways, a beautiful Shanachie in his own way. So here we go. There's no batteries recharger to replace the Shanachie. His hands wit in background, makes the fire dance like demons upon the dance floor of turf. We, a silhouetted audience of story listeners, watch as he whips out a harmonica and plays the foggy tune. Then, with tools of imagination mixed with mouth and truth, sends us riding through the scape of time. The darkness, the cottage, becomes an open sky, meeting with a seamless sea, an abstract fairy road, the leaping, vanishing hare, a lost fox watches in the thicket. The Shanachie's eyes, wide as stars, the hands move with the mountains, a fungal face. I saw the smoke billow from it. Laughter was easy, a collective warmth. And if we were loud ourselves, we would cry. Yet at the time, my phone was dead. I was cut off. It was just me, the fire of the dark. The story was in my head.
Best of the third. Cheers. So we're going to go to our online contingent now, and we'll have Matt Mooney to say a poem. Best of the third.
Hello, the title of the poem is Alive by the Lee. Written some years ago. A tall man bends low while there is time to pick up a lost coin lying in the bus lane before the evening rush. Students heading home, hungry for their dinner, high up in rented rooms across the shaky bridge, up there in Sunday's Well. We walked by the Lee, a looking glass for trees. First kisses on a bench as wild ducks pair away. Sunset on the western road, now an avenue of gold. Blackbirds begin to sing around the pink clinic, place of human healing. On a building site next door, a dumper driver on overtime walking till the last light of day, dumps another load of rubble on a heap of stone and clay. In the new hotel, the Kingsley, champagne in slender glasses, popping corks, loud laughter, and the night falling in the city. The sweet music of a harp scintillating under chandeliers. Gramila Mahagwe.
Nice one. I'm sure while we're there, we'll have Sue Bloom as well. Sue, if you're there.
I'm absolutely here. Nice one. Yeah, thanks very much. To be honest, I know Joe for a very long time with O'Vale, but I never knew him very deeply. Kind of similar to Rosie before she really got to know him. But I was around long enough to notice his humor and his wit. So I have a poem here that I would like to contribute for all of us tonight. It's called Death of a Loved One. The house is wrapped up in clouds, heavy with tears like our hearts. We're sitting inside in silence. Our grieving envelops our souls. We've come together in sadness to share the pain of your loss. You're missing within our circle. We cry and remember your love. Your stories and humor are missing. You've shared your warmth with your friends. Your performance, elaborate and classy. Your laughter has come now to end. So still, your body is empty. Your soothing voice is gone. Your eyes have closed forever. Your breathing is all done. We're shaken with grief as we stand in mourning and disbelief. And even though hard to face, you're leaving this vast empty space. The gap is sore like a wound. The void you leave just echoes with emptiness burning and cold. And we hug each other for hold. We know that your heart's been loving. We know that your soul is light. And as we are sharing our tears, we know you will be all right. You were taken away by the angels. A feather was left on the sill to rejoin the ocean of love. You'll be back with the birds, if you will. And although our grief is cutting like a double-sided knife, we know that your wish for your loved ones is to love and enjoy our life. So we remember your stories, your laughter that fills us with light, while holding on to each other and sharing the love you inspired. Thanks.
Thanks, Lassie. And we're going to have Patricia Walsh next, please.
Thank you. It's a privilege not to have no one. It's about washing a meltdown. If someone died, your heart is full of light. As removed from dissociation from the beloved. Same as that coffee sings in the miniature box. Anxiety from separation acute as required. Regularizing your chat battery in this crash. Sitting alone in classrooms above it all. Appropriate poison where one is engendered. never left alone and suffering for artifice. Paul's son and love sent him by the radio. Best of DJ's voice, you only won't hear. Excavating flowers to someone else's liking. The sea cold as all I have now to savour. Crying under dark, asking for it all. Local history bedeviled the situation well. Throwing obligations into the fire will. Side of streets of vanity comes corner to rest. Like a never exodus, crying to the brass tacks. Quizzical redemption really dig deals of glory. Readily stop swapping pallet points for a show of affection. Remaining quiet in the future of paramount act. Not enough of vodka, enough of catcalls. Kurt's greatest hits of vision aren't fair enough. Returning to the cold, probably a worse option. Magnificently turning over the spare indeed. Thank you.
Stan just SMS'd me this late announcement that he forgot to say while he was on the mic because he was so in character. But he would like to share with you all that he is launching a Christmas single. Next Sunday, the 14th of November, here in the Hayloft. The track is a reworking of a well-known court tune. And the event is ticketed, and tickets are available from on Eventbrite, and it's a 6:45 start. On stand. The 14th.
Sunday coming.
Right. Nice. Number one for Christmas.
And it's here.
Number one for Christmas.
Hey, yeah, for sure.
Nice one, Stan. And we'll have Lauren up next.
Thank you. Now, I didn't know Joe like so many people here tonight, but I'm honored to be here tonight and learn so much about him and so much of his work. And if you're listening, Joe, then I would like to honor you tonight and your sense of mischief with this piece. Okay, so recently my poetry and I were having an identity crisis, so together we wrote this piece. Rome wasn't built on a cliche. My poetry fell out of the wrong side of the bed and kept falling into Nietzsche's abyss. There's only silence now. I find I miss the screams. My poetry goes around and comes around like a deranged carousel at high speed. Just looking at it makes me nauseous. My poetry calls the kettle black. The kettle calls my poetry racist and says it needs to deal with its internalized misogyny. My poetry has a face only a mother can love, but I don't. My poetry plays its cards right and plays them left, up, down, diagonal, and then asks me if I know how to play 52 card pickup. You can't judge my poetry by its cover, because to have a cover, it needs to be published, and to be published, it needs to be less shit. My poetry is a few fries short of a happy meal. I tried to return it, but the staff at McDonald's said they only sell disappointment now. My poetry is a riddle wrapped up in an enigma. Dusted with confusion and deep fried in despair, then served with a side of failure. My poetry beats a dead horse and then gets arrested for defiling a corpse. I paid the bail the first time, now it rots in jail. Thank you.
La Broschino, next piece.
Thanks so much for this evening. It was wonderful to learn so much about Joe.
Incidentally, I was in the Virgin Slate writing group for a while, and he was one of the facilitators. So I was lucky enough to have a few weeks of critique by John. So this next one, I also wanted to say thanks for the readings tonight, guys. I really enjoyed it. So this piece is called The Cartographer. It's a recurring dream. The cartographer. I live between the folds of a map, a faded place name, the surface area of nowhere. Within my horizontal suburbia, I am lost. I cannot navigate the latitudes of sleep. He draws a map for me. I feel the ink from his lifeline seep. He traces a view of infinity. Standing on the precipice of a cliff, staring out to sea, my Friedrich painting, my wonder, is back to me. A stick in his hand, a fallen branch, a gift from a noble fir, perhaps. I imagine it soaring from the heights with the night flight grace of Chagall. Under this shell of me, he will draw the lines, a phonetic system of my inner soundings. My cartographer, who could design every wrinkle of a coastline with one slip of finger-pressed pen. Delicate gradation of ink tint making amends for his departure, unfolding the geometrics of what we once had. He will compose a land that I can live in. More an opening in the clouds to let the demons go.
There's our 5-word challenge winner as well.
Woo!
We go back up to Zoom now, and we will have Pam Campbell next, if you are there, Pam.
Can y'all hear me okay?
Yep.
Yes.
Okay, great. First of all, I want to say I'm sorry for your loss of Joe, but I am truly getting a sense of who he was through your lovely words. So this poem I'm going to read for y'all is called Whisper. Crackle, rustle, red, brown, silky, soft, new life flattens, hugs earthy loam, white spots dull in dusk light. Bobcat oversteps, nears, heartbeat drops, breathing slows. Bobcat claws catch, branch bark, sniffs, earth fawn shallow breeze. Bobcat pads, limb length, drops and disappears in spartina grass. Moist nose, cooled by prevailing wind, notes danger departing. Ears erect, gather quietness, swivel like radar dishes, catches great horned owl, stuttering hoo hoo hoo. One high in pitch, the other low. Fawn eyes, big bright tapestry, passes light twice. Lashes droop downward with slight curve upward. Nose up, high pitches. Fierce hoof thunder breaks darkness, vibrates ground under white belly. Muscular red-brown full-bodied doe stamps and snorts, shh, draws in fawn scent and soft bleats. Fawn, wobbly leg rises, finds teat, pulls and mews. High-pitched notes like an old screen door opening and whispering shut on a summer eve while bobcat waits. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Pam. Thanks a lot. It could be of Augustine, a bit. Augustine is there.
Hey, you hear me? Good.
We can hear, yeah, we can hear kind of faintly.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Here we are. Okay. Beautiful evening, everyone. Yeah, grateful to witness all of it. This poem is called Two Birds Not Trapped. Two birds not trapped in a cage, able to turn a new page, another chapter, able to fly away and live other realities. Although they've met and shared some seeds together, ate worms together, might nest together, go places together, in the end, they still have wings. In the end, they are still birds. None of them are broken, although there's several thoughts and songs unspoken. Both of them can fly if they no longer feel safe. Both can fly and search for a new sanctuary or whatever. One may go with the wind, the other may go with the season. Both still have choices, both still have reasons, and they ignore all the voices of those ignorant of what they have lived. They're two birds not trapped in a cage. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Augustine. Michelle Dore, next, please.
Thanks to everybody for tonight. And short one, what I see from your side. Your eyes on the road, the view from the coast. Your eyes on the match, the heart in the throat. Your eyes on the gecko, the tongue slipping out. Your eyes on the pot, the taste in the mouth. Your eyes on the screen, you're fully immersed. Your eyes on the spinning record. Your eyes on me, your love, your love. Thank you.
We have Charles Clark, also my next speaker.
I never realized quite the depths that were lurked behind Joe's really classic demeanor, should be said. I was, however, I realize now, a fellow graduate of UCD, and I it was a very long time before, prehistoric. Earth or terrace rather than the farm waste, the waste of the off the Silurian road, that kind of thing. However, I wasn't stuck at all. I have actually been writing, but this is an interesting thing. And I was stuck for a title at one point, but it's actually about picturesque views in Kanturk, where I more or less grew up, or part of it anyway, took place. And I just walked that to friends near the Brogean Mills. The Brogean Mills no longer milling at that point. But there you are. The Bachelor's Cottage, the mill yard with guinea fowls and turkeys, the mill house sloping to the front door, over the stream and up to the gate gods, you know, feathery arching branches, a scene from Butter, a glimpse of a house with a haw-haw, the British fleet and cottages bricks and roses, and a gate symbolizing wealth. We have sworn that, the prince said, for fields, gaunt uplands, large and desolate as a battlefield.
Sanchez. I'm no shame of saying to next piece.
This is a program for TDFC, an international game versus the Duo Warsaw and Turner's Cross, and they took this piece. This is not a drill. This is not a drill. Scramble nets empty and ready for the next shot fired in anger. 2 hours to go. 6 months of duty. Second best was never our aim. A drizzle. Every drop, every micron exposed under the arc lights. The start of a green wave. It heaves and weaves across our field of vision, hovering and swelling and surging, roaring down our flanks again and again like a great ocean's fetch. Look out, one sniping, glass wiping, others text typing, flag hyping, a genie, grey as a battleship, fat as a school of bull seals, twirling, over rail swirling and curling past ensign and stanchion. In his guts, an orange flare signals, intense as the tang of gunpowder. We wait, nerves taut as a guy wire. Shortly, our fate will be sealed by whistle and semaphore. That tannoy is frantically squawking, a roll lost in the clutter and clatter of a chopper in cloud overhead. A foghorn's blare cut off in mid-note, the cacophony signals the skipper, bursting from the war games room, mascot and crew in close formation. He hits the decks running, a dozen drums drowned by 13,000 hands. Clap, clap, the rebel army. Clap, 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 the rebel army. Clap, clap, the rebel army. The shed explodes.
Now we're going to go back online there with Ben Burns. Ben Burns is there.
When I talked to Joe, I've talked to Joe about birdsong and music, and he really loved those things. But whenever I talked to Joe, he'd mentioned me being from Sligo, and he'd mentioned Yeats. And I think he really loved Sligo and Yeats, as well as obviously being very passionate about music and birdsong. But I thought I'd read a Yeats poem for the open mic. So I'll read The Fiddler of Dooney. When I play on my fiddle in Dooney, folk dance like a wave of the sea. My cousin is priest in Kilvarnet, my brother in Maharabui. I pass my brother and cousin. They read in their books of prayer. I read in my book of songs I bought at the Sligo Fair. When we come at the end of time to Peter sitting in state, he will smile on the three old spirits, but call me first through the gate. For the good are always the merry, save by an evil chance. And the merry love the fiddle, and the merry love to dance. And when the folk there spy me, they will all come up to me, with here is the fiddler of Dooney, and dance like a wave of the sea.
Thanks a lot, Ben. Awesome. And Graham Christie up next, please.
After weeks of no sleep, I realized I hadn't been awake in years, condemning myself to waiting and fear. My heavy words placed on the shoulders of another, smothering growth yet playing the dough, for it was easier to feel aware than be aware. And I would stare down anyone who acknowledged this in me as deluded, Any who clued that I might have an unconscious issue, one that highlights a misuse of my time or a misuse of my life. For I was living a life that had already passed and cast its reflections onto my present, and I became hesitant to trust because my righteous experience dictated that only my reality be reflected. And instead of acknowledging that pattern, that smattering of explosions caused by resentment and the abandonment of self, I placed the blame on the shoulders of another when they fell from their perfection that they never aspired to reach. And I leached onto these beliefs so intensely that the immensity clouded my vision and I couldn't engage in the vision of myself. And in times of contentment, I fixated on a future, using it as a suture to seal something as solid. What will have, where will go, what I'll know replaced where I am, what I have, and what I understand. And I reprimanded myself for never feeling settled in my skin without ever letting truth in. And you know, I think people get tired of this shit because they see it and you don't. They say it and you won't hear. And they feel it and you continue to live in fear of ever seeing beyond yourself. So finally, I'm saying, fuck it. I want to see stars for me. I want to read for me. I want to write for me. I want to walk for me, talk for me, cook for me, clean for me, work for me, and live for me. So finally, I'm confronting this need and this ego and this lifelong fallacy. And I'm becoming someone in the know. I'm becoming someone in the now.
Just to say, if anybody else online would like to read, this is the time to sign up. Oh, maybe not. So yeah, to close the open mic this evening, we have a very warm, real welcome to Bilal, please.
Thanks for tonight anyway. It's been a special, very special night. And all the stories of Joe as well, it's been lovely to be a part of it. Here's a short poem. I take a deep breath and I listen to my mind and its confliction. All my thoughts are running wild and my happiness is slides. Sorry. Lost it. I take a deep breath and I listen to my mind and its confliction. All my thoughts are running wild and my happiness subsides. Like soft mud between the trees, whose roots as light as leaves, gaining weight as it descends. My solution is to run. Run before it buries you. Run to catch yourself. Run until the earth beneath your feet begins to melt. Run until the root beneath the trees begin release. Run until your feet begins to cry for sympathy. Run until you think that you're the wind that split the eaves. Run until you gasp for breath and collapse between beneath the weight. Run until your heart constricts and forces you to taste the bitterness of self-delusion so acidic on your tongue. Run until you realize that running is all you've done.
You're on?
Oh.
Peace? Are you
going to read? You go first.
Come on,
Mag's going to take one.
George, just one little small thing. I suppose he spent a lot of time really thinking and talking about that story about Maeve, and he sent the story on to a good few of us. So I do hope it gets published and there's a thought for his legacy and put a lot of thought into how we went to the first chapter illustrated. And I passed on that to the sisters, you know, what the work I'd done. It was guests. I'd say, God, Joe, is this a commission? And they'd say, no, you just do the pictures. And if they like it, you get something. So we were always meeting and nothing pleased. He really was particular about these sort of very rough images. It was a series of them we did.
of the very errant poor school teacher, and she trying to go into the gate and the letter falling off the gate and the kids having to push the car. So it was just something that mattered. And I think I did an awful lot of sketches of Joe over the years, but he didn't approve of any of them. We did want one for the fly leaf. So this one, it was in charcoal in the other picture. So I suppose because he wanted it, I said, I might just kick it right there. And I suppose Joe spent a lot of time correcting our work and we sharing his. He liked kind of sharp, pithy things, but he did like plastic ones, if I could find one there. He liked to believe something about art, so I did a series of ones about models and poor old models, a nice sketching always pulled my heart. We stuck there for hours. So I had a series of model ones, but this one he liked anyway. It's called Still. Was just for David. Where he stuck there all day, and his name's David. He's at it all day Sunday again. He does not flinch when eyes bore through, measuring each contour. Keeps the pose, though quadriceps, ripple, fasciculations, fatigued, he endures. His name is David. For this hour, lost to his private, musing world, pairs of searching probes of telescope. Weak chorus of 20, 10, 5, now change. Rodin, too, had need a form, marble carved and noble art, sculpt nature. Oh, some permit to dissect, to saw and render. Donors are in residence, they defer to say. He says, it will do for you to try to capture me and see behind my blank-eyed soul. So we gather beneath the Juliet balcony on the North Man in Cork at night, dazzled in the studio lights and still. Thanks.
So nice, and just drawing a beautiful lens. Yeah, love to have a look through. Right. Well then everyone, thank you so much for input into the evening. And thank you to Joe, like, so unbelievable to have his presence here with us today, and like really to feel him here, and yeah, like a mentor to many of us, a real inspiration to all of us. Some of us who hadn't really met much of him, I'm sure know much more about him now. And like, right, it's amazing that a group of people can give a sense of somebody through their work and through their love for that person and their passion for that person, and a real sign and testament to the mark that he left on all of us and all that he did for us and for this room, and like Paul Casey, for all of us here. And just a big thank you to Joe and to his family for being here today. I don't know, I suppose Mains is probably back on the Cairns, isn't it? Can we get a big round of applause for our tech wizard there? Yay! Yeah.